It is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It's 8 p.m. in the Middle East. Today is December 22nd, 2014. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. We started today with a song of Mango that we lost a few weeks back. Mango was one of the leading artists in Italy, a man that music was everything for him, and sure enough, he died on stage singing the same song that I just played, Oh, Moon Gold. He was magnificent. He did music in a way that gave the next generations a lot to learn from. And we appreciate them. I grew up on him and his music, and I'll miss him dearly. He's a fantastic human being with all his sensitivity. And, you know, having an artist and leaving us such a legacy is a blessing. So I thank all the artists in the world that take the time to give the world some extra beauty that so many are trying to take. Now, today on BBS Radio, we are going to review the upcoming election in Israel and the upcoming candidates. You know, the state of Israel is a great nation, and it's a great nation because it survived so many attacks. It survived the diaspora after 2,000 years. And it's nice that we can look at the people that are running for office and want to lead the country and the perspective of what they are representing. It's not easy, you know, to go on an election 2 years after the last one. It's becoming to be a little like a zoo when you have to change candidate and a representative every so often for the prime minister job, not just to lead, you know, a congressional district or something. It's because it's the whole country, and everybody in the world know how sensitive the situation here in Israel and why Israel is so important in the world, because it is the Holy Land. It's because Jerusalem, it's its capital, is the holy city of God. And now in the holiday season that we all worship, you know, our belief and faith, we all come to the same point, Jerusalem and what it represents, that spirit of humankind that only God can give us. And it's important to understand that the people who deal with it have to really have a clean end and also a lot of sensible thinking. And creativity is a really, really, really important thing. And I chose a few segments from the past to give you perspective of what people are like. And one of them is, you know, a very special section of Bill Maher interviewing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And we're going to listen to this, and we'll talk about it afterwards. Let's go to that.
Seven past the hour, there appears to be an end to the halt of reported Israeli airstrikes targeting Hezbollah weapons in Syria. The Syrian government is accusing the country of carrying out strikes near an airport and is urging the UN to take action. Here with us now, Israeli Minister of the Economy, Naftali Bennett. Very good to have you on the show this morning.
Morning.
Mr. Minister, thank you so much for being with us. A lot to talk about today. I'm not sure exactly where we start, so let's talk about, I mean, we always talk about how chaotic our government is and dysfunctional it is. It's good to have you on. We can talk about what happened over there.
Things in perspective.
Benjamin Netanyahu blew everything up as far as the cabinet, and I guess the election's coming in March.
Yeah, we're going to general elections in March. I think it's going to be pretty much about what our stance in the region should be. Should we be on the strong and tough side or on the appeasing side? There's basically two approaches in Israel. If one approach says, you know, we're in this mess of a region with ISIS and Hezbollah,
right,
and Hamas, and we just got to stand tough. The other approach says we need to try and pacify the region, and somehow they'll love us enough to accept the Jewish state.
I don't have to ask where you are.
Yeah, you don't have to ask. It was sort of a leading comment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So let's talk about the backbiting and Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet. What caused it?
Well, there was a lot of tension regarding the latest conflict, and I guess just interpersonal problems in the government. And I guess he was fed up with all of this and said, "Let's go back to the people and ask them for renewed vow."
Well, there's some controversy going on with this nationality bill that is being discussed or being proposed. I was wondering, what's your take on that? There's some criticism that it's going to alienate Israel, pushing it further away from democracy, making it a state only for the Jewish population, not the minority Arabs. And that was one of the reasons why this cabinet collapsed.
Well, my stance is very simple. Israel is a Jewish and democratic state, period. It's the state of the Jewish nation. You know, we're surrounded by 23 Arab states and Muslim states. We only have one tiny Jewish state, which, by the way, from one side to another, if you get in a car, you know how long a drive it is? 15 minutes. That's how big Israel is from side to side, from the ocean to the Green Line. 15-minute ride. It's almost a bit more than Manhattan. And so, yeah, we're the state of the Jews, all right? The Jews only have one state in the world, and it's democratic. We have 2 million Arabs who enjoy full equal rights. They vote for the Knesset. They become members of Knesset. We have Arab Supreme Court judges, and it should be so. As Minister of Economy, I've worked very hard to bring in the Arab women population into the workforce. We only had 25% of them working, compared to almost 80%. Right. So I've set up employment centers and training centers across Israel. Now we're up to 30%. I want to bring it up to 80%.
Let's look at politics there. The Secretary of State, John Kerry, said he would not interfere at all in the election, Israeli elections. What influence or support are you looking for from the United States?
None in the sense of, I don't think any country should intervene in another country's internal democratic process. In the past, it's even backlashed. Sometimes there was external intervention, which brought the opposite result. So I
was going to ask, I don't know that John Kerry's endorsement would actually help right now, given the last 6 months. We know him. We could ask him to endorse
you. Sure,
would you like that?
I do want a good future in the Israeli political system. I think Israelis, like many other countries, when there's external pressure, we sort of bounce back. And America is Israel's best friend. We don't have anyone like America in the world that understands that in the midst of this Muslim spring and chaos of ISIS, Hezbollah, and Hamas cutting off heads, there's one tower of democracy smack in the middle, and that's Israel.
Let's talk about this summer and obviously concerns from John Kerry and the president. You go back to July.
Yeah.
And we were watching horrific images coming out of Gaza day in and day out. I've long been a strong Israeli supporter, but I voiced real concerns on there about the images that I was seeing there. Looking back over the summer, is there something that Israel could have done differently? Somehow they could have managed that crisis better?
We need to have it shorter. First of all, we need to avoid having any conflict. Unfortunately, I served in pretty much every military conflict as a soldier and commander. No one wants war. Problem is simple. The Palestinians keep on placing missile launchers within schools, within homes, and then they shoot at my kid's house, at my children.
Now, I certainly understand that, there were obviously a lot of warnings about the United Nations school. We've heard repeated warnings time and time again. And it seemed to me, again, as somebody who's consistently been a supporter of Israel, that this time Israel ignored some warnings that it shouldn't have ignored, and people died because of it. Is that fair to say that some pretty big mistakes were made?
I think the big mistake was by Hamas, who placed in the UN camps, in hospitals, in schools, it placed missile launchers and shot missiles into Israel. That's the story.
Right.
And then we shot back. And yes, there was, unfortunately, a lot of death. But it's Hamas who's butchering its own people by placing a missile launcher. Imagine if you walk on the streets of New York and someone's standing behind his kids and shooting at you, at your kids. You'll shoot back. He's killing his own kids. Hamas was killing their own children by doing that. It's very unfortunate, but Israel will always defend itself.
I know you're not a political analyst. Instead, you're a minister of economy, but I'm asking you to be a political analyst right now. The prime minister obviously believes he can put together a different kind of coalition in this new, in the election you guys are going to have in March. So just talk about the political dynamics there. Like, has now Israeli public opinion has shifted further on the, far enough to the right that the prime minister can build a government that's more to his liking?
I think that's pretty much the idea. What happened during the last summer is there was a profound sea change in the Israeli public. I would say about 10% movement to the right because Israelis were disillusioned. Let's understand what happened. We gave up Gaza. We pulled out. We expelled 8,000 Jews from their homes. There's no soldiers, no Jews. We gave 100% of the Gaza Strip to the Palestinians, to Abu Mazen, to Fatah in 2005. And now from that very place, they're shooting tens of thousands of missiles at us. So when you look at the fact, it's sort of people say, what's the deal? Why do we do this? People less believe in this giving up more land approach.
How do you break the continued cycle of violence? How do you do it?
You know,
it seems to me you've got one of two choices. You either figure out a way to negotiate with Hamas or you obliterate Hamas.
Or you just stand tough. You know, not every problem in life has a perfect solution. We are in a very difficult region.
There's no doubt about it. And certainly one of my pet peeves through the years have been American politicians that have tried to win Nobel Peace Prizes on the backs of Israeli security. So I understand completely. That said, standing tough, maintaining the status quo, continues a cycle of terror on both sides.
Not necessarily. I believe that we have to do sort of a economic Marshall Plan in the region. We can't solve it politically in the short term. Everyone understands that. But it doesn't mean we have to sit on our hands. We need to invest in infrastructure common for Palestinians and Israelis, and join businesses which are really working pretty well.
Can I ask Eamon about this? Because I sit there and look at this violence, the horrific conditions that the Gazans are living in. And I sit here and wonder what the world community can do to improve the economy there and talk about sort of a mini Marshall Plan for Gaza. Is that, would that have an impact?
It would absolutely have an impact. I think when the quality of life gets better for people, you're going to see a change in the attitudes. But with all due respect to the minister, there is a certain problem with Gaza, and that is it's an area that remains under siege. It's true that Israel withdrew its soldiers and its settlers, but Israel still controls the territorial waters, the airspace, pretty much all of the economic aspects of development in Gaza. But not only Gaza, if you take a look also at the West Bank, obviously Israel has an ally or at least a partner in the West Bank with the Palestinian Authority, some would like to argue, right. But it hasn't improved the economic situation for Palestinians.
Well, I actually beg to differ on both. In Gaza, our policy is simple. Open up for any civilian use, food, water, anything they need is fully open. But if they want to import missiles or cement to dig tunnels into Israel, which they did, you know, they've spent the past 5 years taking all that cement and building terror tunnels into our kibbutzim instead of hospitals. They have to make a decision. If they want to build Gaza, if they want to turn Gaza into Singapore, I will be their biggest ally. If they want to turn it into Afghanistan, no way.
And quickly on the West Bank, talk about
West Bank. I also disagree. West Bank is going through a very good economic growth. It's true, the Palestinian Authority, it's a pretty corrupt authority. They take all the money the world pours in to their pockets. But the people there, they want to thrive. They want to, and today already 30,000 Palestinians are working side by side with Israelis. Why can't it be 300 Palestinians? Let's make life better for 10 years instead of all these diplomatic stuff. And let's revisit the whole thing in 10 years with everyone having a better quality of life.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there because this is a fascinating conversation. Yeah. Naftali Bennett, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll work on that John Kerry endorsement.
Yeah.
That wasn't Bill Maher. That was Minister Bennett. Minister Naftali Bennett used to be the assistant to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He is the upcoming force in the right wing in Israel. Many try to describe him as really extremist, but he is not. He's more a man of action and not a man of, titles or whatever. He actually tried to develop a better economy. He's coming from the high-tech industry. He made an exit, and what he does well you review a plan, and if it doesn't work, you change the players or change the plan and start attack again. He's very, very strong on his belief that, you know, when you make peace with somebody, he needs to be a friend of yours or peaceful with you. He's not going to take any other way or any things that it's less than a real agreement. And when he talks about developing Gaza, I want to remind everybody that the world pledged $5 billion to reconstruct Gaza after the last war of this summer. And for some reason, all the what Hamas was pledging is to rebuild the tunnels. However, good news, this morning they're starting to build a new Coca-Cola facility, and God bless Coca-Cola, investing $20 million there to start building. And the first phase of the construction is going to start soon, I guess. And what it's important is to have a vision how it's going to look. And I remember a day when I met with the ambassador of Palestinian Authority in Washington, D.C., and I told him, you know, you guys have a very, very nice stretch of seashore, and you should, you know, approach it from a different perspective as far as how you build that state or, you know, build that territory. And building a territory that is nice and neat and close to the sea, you can build it, build hotels, build after nice houses, build, you know, big apartment buildings for other population. You could build it, and sure enough, because it got destroyed so many times, and it's important to remember, the status, you know, of Gaza is always they're trying to constrain it to the siege that they have from Israel, which it's not really. When you have a siege, you don't have traffic of trucks coming in and coming out every day. And a lot of people are coming and moving to work in Israel. And if you see the images of how many people want to come and work in Israel every day, and it's not a pleasant picture to look at, because they come, they wake up in the morning, they really believe in Israel as far as work goes, because they wouldn't wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning to stay in line to get into the border. Now, think about immigration to the USA. Think about the worker from Mexico coming in the morning from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. and starting processing their you know, visa for a day, and they're going in and they're going out supposedly at the end of the day. I don't remember any other state in the world, and please correct me, of course, I don't know everything. If you have the possibility to come work in another state, and sure enough, and come back in the evening, just imagine Mexican come in every day and go back every night. And then, you know, at the end of the day, the entity, the people that hold Gaza are calling up destruction of Israel. So it's a ludicrous, imaginary scenario to think that Israel should not put a strain on that exit and entry, because it's ridiculous to even imagine a state that is under threat, that won't control one by one those people. And of course, they look like refugees all the time if you look at the image. But if you see the line, think about a line of people in you know, in the metro. It's the same thing. It looks like a lot of people stretched and waiting in line. Sure, Disneyland will be the same. The only difference is the look difference, because those come from refugee camp that people in the Gaza Strip don't let them rebuild a really regular livelihood, because they live under UNRWA. UNRWA is the foundation for the refugees, of Palestinian refugees. which they invented just to bring people under control, and they make sure that they are living in squalor, and they have no life. With all the money of billions of dollars that pour in for 1993, you know, it's 21 years already of investing in that land, and it's still destroyed. Of course, Israel come and fight them back every time they shoot a missile, and the destruction is ever, it's a continuation of fight, and, you know, but if you don't let them build a normal life there, they look like refugees, they come to the border, and it's a miserable, miserable picture. Now, Naftali Bennett is a man of work. He has a very, very extraordinary list of people working with him. His list, and I witnessed one of their debates in the early stage when they just created the party. They're brilliant. And I would tell you, they know their facts, right? And they come from a belief system, you know, something that you really want to see in the leadership. Somebody who believes what he says. People are young, very promising, brilliant young men, and they're coming and they're looking to the truth, and they know math, and because they're so smart, they say to the left, guys, this last night we had a conversation that one of his candidates on the list, Ronen Chauvel, was saying to the left wing, he said, guys, you are messianic. In sense that they believe in the fairy tales, because if somebody wants to shoot you, you don't give them your house, or you don't give them more space in near you. Try to defend the border. So this is for Bennett, that is one of the candidates. They're promising him. We have 120 seats in the Knesset. And the last election, he had 12, which was controversial because he got 14. But then there was some exchange, and it got 12. And if 120, probably he's going to get up to 19, even though that the last poll trying to show that he's less, but I'm still thinking he's getting a very, very strong review, and his list is incredible. The women on his list are phenomenal. We have one Arab lady, fantastic representation of the Arab Israeli. If you see an Arab Israeli who is so proud to be Israeli, who sent her kids to the army, who vowed to stand for Israel because Israel gives her the future, the hope, and the everyday life that she will never have anywhere in the Arab world, that's something that you have to watch for. Very pretty lady, very smart, one of the ladies that I think I'm looking forward to see her in the Knesset, and she's on the Beit Yehudi, you know, the Jewish house. That's the name of the party, and I believe in her. And I hope she makes it very well. Well, we have another one, I guess, that Bill Maher needs to come on, because we mentioned him before with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, the guy that give his heart, his soul, and all his being from the very youth to the Jewish state. And he's a well-recognized man all over the world. And people know that he's a serious man, and he's very smart. He's kind. He's a good father. He's a good husband. He's a man that represents a lot of a value that you want to see in a leader. And world leadership, that's what's important, because you see the whole picture. Something that we need to always focus on, that people with leadership need to have a global vision, or a global vision of their responsibility. And Benjamin Netanyahu is one of the men that does that. That always, I agree with him. And sure enough, I always have a voice, and I can make sure that, you know, I comment and I tell, but but it doesn't mean that I lose the belief that he's a good man. He's a great man, and I respect him a lot. And I hope that we can get Bill Maher this time interview, so you can hear even how nice he is. I know that in Israel they like to, the left wing like to torture and make fun of his personal life, which they're not, it's not their business. And one comment when Bennett was saying in the last interview that is America interfering in election? Well, come on, we know what we're doing all the time. We have no question about interfering. It's just to think about it. Are you doing it with good intention, or you have a different intention? As long as you support Israel, as long as you come with, we have friends, and we talk about business, that's life. And nobody said we don't touch you. Of course they touch, of course they talk. The only problem is when we have people from the change parties, and we're not mentioning the person, because we always mention the scene, but not the sinner. A person that come from one party, then moved to another party, built another party. We're talking three party already. Then he grow big, lose the chance to build a government, and destroy the party, and start a new party, and then destroy that party too, and mixed up with another party. I'm sure you didn't understand what I said now, but that's the situation. Nobody can understand the movement of a leader like that. And if the U.S. trusts a person that moves from one party to another every year, I know that America is smarter than that. So I wouldn't put my eggs on that basket, and especially when we have a lot of history that we can recall. Not many recognize, the efforts of every candidate. And sometimes there are people that come across in leadership position when they do something that is so memorable that you remember them. And there are people that you do that with them when you remember their good act. And there are people, like leaders, that you remember them for the bad act. And that person, I can remember many times that did wrong. And when when somebody does wrong, you remember. And then if they come, push come to shove, you pull that card. Excuse me, we are so sorry, but that ethical behavior is not ethical. I guess unethical behavior is not acceptable. Anyway, let's try to get Bill Maher on with Benjamin Netanyahu and see what we have on this new upcoming election. This is something from the past.
At the phone, time will be real time.
Would you please welcome the former Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. How are you today, Mr. Prime Minister?
I'm fine.
Is that what I should refer to you as? Because I know you've had many jobs in the Israeli government, foreign minister and prime minister and finance minister, UN ambassador.
Now, Bill, you want to start with a quarrel? You want to call me prime minister? I'm not going to argue with you.
No, and I know when Israeli politicians come to the United States, it usually means they're trying to get their old job back.
No, actually, it doesn't, because... because America is of interest to us, whether in opposition or in government. America is important for everyone.
But you do want your old job back.
Yes, I do.
Well, that's the kind of honesty we don't have here in America from our politicians. And I have heard you referred to many times as the most Americanized of the Israeli prime ministers. Do you find that to be a compliment?
If by that it means that you talk straight to your audience, I'll tell you what, I spent a few, yes, I would, but it's supposed to be derogatory because the idea of communicating with voters was an abstruse and alien idea in the party system that we had, which was more or less Tammany Hall. That was an American idea, too, that went by the wayside for a new American politics, and I prefer the new one with all its failings to the old one with all its corruptions.
Well, I don't know if we've gotten rid of all our corruption.
No, you haven't.
But I'll tell you one thing. Unlike America, Israel seems to be able to fight wars very quickly. What is your secret? Because we don't seem to have the hang of that.
The secret is that we have America.
Yeah.
And America, you see, the point is that Israel, when it fights, is subject to international pressures. And the people who are fighting us are subject to international pressures. In fact, the kind of wars that we fight cannot last forever. They're either won or lost or drawn, but they end. And they end fairly quickly in the televised age. They're not sustainable beyond a few weeks. And I said as much on the first day of the Second Lebanon War. That's what we call it now. I said we have a limited time. Some Israeli politician actually said the hourglass is ticking. That's what they said. The hourglass is ticking. And I said, well, yeah, the clock is ticking. And that's why you should get as decisive a victory as you can in the shortest amount of time. The time factor is real for a country like Israel fighting a war. It's less real for a country like the United States.
But this is not over between you and Hezbollah. This is just halftime.
It's not between us and Hezbollah.
It's not between you and Hezbollah?
No.
Who is it between?
Us and Iran, you and Iran,
right.
The rest of the world and Iran. Hezbollah doesn't exist.
Okay.
People are clapping for Iran?
No, they're clapping that they think you got it right.
Well, I'm glad because...
And I do too.
Well, Bill, I want to clarify what I mean by that. I think it's important. Look, Hezbollah kidnapped these three soldiers without getting clearance from their masters in Tehran. But once the fighting got going, they were essentially a forward unit of the Iranian army. They were trained by the Iranian army on Iranian soil, using right. Iranian weapons, using Iranian tactics, and their long-range weapons are controlled by Iranian officers. So this is a forward unit of the Iranian army, and therefore when we talk about Hezbollah, we're really asking, what does Iran want? It wanted a diversion from its nuclear weapons program, and it got it. But right now, I think it wants quiet because it wants to somehow pursue the completion of the of its plan to build atomic bombs, from which they intend to bomb us out of existence, but bomb many people and
but
annihilate.
But they would never bomb you, would they? Because they know that you would hit them back. I've never understood why Israel is so coy about nuclear weapons. I mean, I know you have them. You know you have them. I think most countries that have nuclear weapons, probably they were built by Jewish scientists or the Chinese kid. But but it's unrealistic to think that Israel doesn't have nuclear weapons or would not use them for its survival. So why be cagey about it?
Well, I think that let's suppose for a second, I'm going to avoid answering this question, okay? Here, I'm being openly evasive.
Okay.
So now having dispatched with that, let me address the other side of the equation of your question. Iran, you think, ought to perform or ought to act the way the Soviet Union acted. The Soviet Union had nuclear weapons, the U.S. had nuclear weapons, and so there was a standoff, and in fact a nuclear peace established, right?
Yes. Now,
so you'd think, well, wouldn't Iran behave like the Soviet Union? Except that the Soviet Union and the Soviet communists in general always put their survival before their ideology, before their zealotry. You cannot rely on militant Islam, a militant Islamic regime like Iran to behave the same way. For example, you remember any Soviet suicide bombers? No. But militant Islam produces hordes of them, and they smash into buildings in New York, bringing down towers, smashing into the Pentagon. Now you had some people who were willing to blow themselves up, blow their children up, to bring down aircraft. This is a pathological creed, and it may be that the current leadership of Iran, which is a mad purist, Islamic fantasist, that would say, well, you know, we can get to heaven in a mad apocalyptic apocalypse where millions die on both sides, a disappeared imam, a religious holy man from about 1,000 years ago would reappear. millions would die on both sides, but the millions, the Islamic millions, would go to a Islamic heaven with all the trimmings. And, you know, that's not a bad heaven for them. So you think this is crazy. People can't really think that way. People can't re-engage in religious wars. That disappeared 300 years ago from mankind. Or did it? Well, you have these people smashing into the World Trade Center. You have these incredible things happening because these people really mean it. And you cannot have these madmen acquiring atomic bombs, because all the nuclear powers that you mentioned up to now have a control over the button. They are not mad. They understand the limits of the use of this weapon. That is not true of Iran. That's why it should not be allowed to develop nuclear weapons.
Okay. And I would agree with you that the people in Iran and many other Muslim countries are much too comfortable with the idea of the world coming to an end, but so are some of Israel's greatest supporters. Does it not make you a bit uncomfortable that the Christian right here in America, which backs Israel fervently, really does so because they think Jesus is going to return? Many of them believe he will do so in their lifetime. And when Jesus returns, he must return to whence he came. And what he's going to do when he gets there, basically, is convert all the Jews or kill them.
Well, you know, let's argue about that point when it happens, right? But I think that there's a huge difference, no matter what people believe in. The question is, what do you do about those beliefs? And it is not true, and there is not a parallelism between Christian evangelicals and Muslim militants. And I'll tell you what the difference is. Number one, the Christian evangelicals do not believe that they have to annihilate entire nations and initiate wars and bomb people into smithereens. They do not. They believe whatever they believe, but they do not believe this. And many of them are firmly committed to democracy. I think most of them, if not all of them. The second point is that they're basically sane people, and they're very careful. You can argue with this or that element of a person's belief, but in the case of militant Islam, you have something that deviates from Islam, that deviates from modernity, that deviates from anything that we've had in the post-Enlightenment period. They really don't accept the modern world. They don't accept choice. They don't accept free information. They don't accept women having the freedoms. They don't accept your children having the freedom to decide what it is they listen, hear, and do. And that is a very unforgiving and dangerous creed. We've never had this mad ideology armed with nuclear weapons. People always refer to Hitler. And in some sense, there is a parallel. But in another sense, there isn't, because Hitler entered a world conflict and then went to produce nuclear weapons. The great luck for us that he did that. Ahmadinejad is going about it the other way around. He's first creating the nuclear arsenal, and then he'll march onto the world stage and the world conflict. So far, he's just using proxies like Hezbollah. So we have to understand how dangerous this is. You do not want a latter-day Hitler with nuclear weapons. You really must stop that.
No, and it's always amazed me that among all the nations in the world, the one that gets compared to the Nazis the most in the world press is actually Israel. And I think
You know why?
Well, the Jerusalem Post says it's because you need a local Bill Maher. It said the foreign ministry would do well to watch Bill Maher to learn how to sell Israel's case to a TV audience. What do you think? I could roll that way.
Hey, Bill, watch it. You watch it. If I'm prime minister, you'll get the job.
I could roll that way, I'm telling you. If the Jews want to pay me, I love HBO, but I mean the other Jews.
Government salaries are...
Good point.
What you think, and I'm cutting them.
But do you think Israel does have an image problem?
Yes, I do. I think there's a reason why some people are so quick to compare Israel to the Nazis. Israel, that is a democratic country that exercises unbelievable restraint. You know, during the war, I was asked to by our Knesset, our parliament, to go to London. We were being smashed by some of the British media, most of it. And they said to me, what do you say? I can imitate a British accent, but you get the point. What do you say about all these civilian casualties in Lebanon? And I said, do you really want to go that route? And you said, yes. What about the horrendous number, which was close to 1,000, undoubtedly a tragic number? I said, well, the only way we can say if we are proportionate or disproportionate is to look at the only other example of a city rocketed by about the same number of rockets, 4,000 rockets, and that's London. And Churchill's response was to obliterate Dresden and close to, I think, altogether 200,000 German civilians. They were bombed by day, firebombed by night, deliberately. So we are disproportionate, disproportionately restrained, because we seek to just attack the rocketeers who are committing a double war crime, both rocketing civilians and hiding behind civilians, both right. War crimes under the Fourth Geneva Convention. So why do people resort to this lie? Number one, European guilt. They did nothing to help the Jews during the Nazi Holocaust. And by comparing Israel to the Nazis, they absolve themselves and they say, you see, the Jews are just as bad. We're not. But they're very bad in making that comparison. We don't have that problem in America. I think the American people are eminently fair. By and large, the American media, which you occasionally castigate, and I appreciate your puncturing of hypocrisy and falsehood, but on the whole, the American people have it right, and they know who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. And we're fighting the same war against the same common enemies who are barbaric and evil. People who blow up children in a bus or smash into buildings and kill thousands of people or try to poison airline passengers. These people are evil. They should be stopped.
And one of the concepts that was quoted in this article that I was trying to raise was that the world seems to want it both ways with the Jews. When they went to their slaughter, as they have been accused of in World War II, they said, how could the Jews do that? How could they let the Nazis just line them up and march right into the gas chamber? But then when they defend themselves, somehow the Jews are doing it without showing restraint. It seems to me the world just doesn't like it when the Jews win.
I think there's something in what you say, but I think it has to do with something related close by. I'll tell you what it is. For about 2,000 years, the Jew was the perfect victim. I mean, we had no land, no army, no government, no way to defend ourselves. So we were slaughtered with happy abandon by sundry nations and movements and crazies. But having been a perfect victim, we were always perfectly moral, because if you were just on the receiving end of tremendous violence, pogroms, massacres, expulsions, Holocaust, then you are perfectly moral. And the world got used to the idea that the Jew is a victim. Now, when we refuse to be a victim, after the latest and greatest pogrom, the Holocaust, took place, we reestablished our state, raised an army to defend ourselves. Now we are on the world scene and we have to fight these terrorists, and we have to decide what to do when they rocket us from civilian neighborhoods, and we take action, and occasionally, unintentionally, of course, civilians get killed. Now we've deviated from that perfection of powerlessness into power. And I think there's a real historical adjustment that is yet to take place in the perception of a large portion of mankind towards the Jews. Well, we refuse to be victims, and we're not going to be annihilated again, and we will defend ourselves with the same moral code that any democratic and normal society would apply to itself. We're just not going back into those gas chambers.
And we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis, The Impossible Truth on BBS Radio, and that was Benjamin Netanyahu. What a great leader. My goodness, I can hear this interview and realize a wonderful, wonderful, man, how he thinks and how he understands the nature of the world. And of course, Israel is not going to be a victim anymore. It's going to defend itself and never have a plan. It's not going to happen, because God of Israel does want this state to be. In fact, he helped us create it, and from the ashes of Holocaust created a good, great nation. So it's time to call it quits and tell them no more. And of course, if anybody wants to start, we'll be here defending herself. And Israel, this is Hanukkah, so we remember the miracles of Hanukkah, and we know that miracles happen every day in Israel. And it's holiday season all over the globe, and it's a time for the blessing. It's time to bless the world with incredible, incredible force of great good, with blessing that every house in the world will be lit with its own miracles, its own greatness, and a lot of hope, and beautiful children that can play and have the greatness to study, to learn, to grow, and take the world elsewhere. Brother, this man is not a word or a sentence. It's a way of living. And if you give love to the world and give love to the children, who can create the next generation of leadership, we might go a different direction. And before we salute, and I know that we have not much time, and I do trust that we can start thinking about evolving and creating a new day. We need to remember that right now, we have Christian in Iraq, in refugees camp, in the courtside, boys waiting, you know, hundreds of thousands waiting for any country to help them. United Nations, instead of putting the Palestinian on their major agenda, which they don't know where they're going, put aside this for a minute and start taking care of business, for real business. The refugees all over. This 2014 had more refugees than the last decade. It's about time to start finding them a solution. If the world know that United Nations does something, it can come to help. But the United Nations does not occupy those refugees. I saw, you know, the call from the ground. Refugees, a Christian, that are persecuted by the Muslims, are in Iraq, on the Kurd side, in tents, in the winter, children, men, women, and they are asking. It was a call for help, and I'm voicing that call to the world. Help those Christians in Iraq, to help them move. They're asking us, you know, a country to take them. Maybe we can divide them. Maybe we can help them go to a different nation. And European, come on, you guys are so bad at so many things. You have to make up on things that you did in the past. And please don't repeat history. It's redundant. Do something new. Take in some people, but in a way that they can leave. It's not like you open the gate and then leave them for our own destiny, and then you say, oh my God, you have refugees. No, make a plan, a global plan of how to see to it. We have a lot of places of war in the world, and I don't want to ask, you know, states by name and tell them, you know, ask for their help. But I'm saying it's the eve of the holiday season. It's a place that need to be called, you know, a place of grace in the hearts of mankind. Do something right this season. Go call upon the United Nations to help those refugees. Make a plan. Those people are working there. They are in New York City enjoying America livelihood. Let them understand that they are only there for a reason, to unite the world, to help the world, to make it a better day. And if not, they can go away, because we don't need them. You know, we don't need a group of people, politicians, sitting day after day United Nations, the only thing that they're constant is condemning Israel that's fighting for its existence. And I'm talking about the Holy Land. Israel is the chosen people by God to be the light upon nation. It's the people that want, supposed to hold the place holy, not because they're different. It's because it's their duty. And I want really people to understand the work of the duty to keep holy. It means that you have to keep the place sacred, and sacred places need attention and kindness. And all the world is welcome to Israel. And all the world can come and see how much effort is giving to the land. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this was The Impossible Truth. It's Monday's show, and I'm so happy to be here. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that we can start a new year in a good way. What can I say? I love you all. I want to bless you all. And I hope that your heart will be open to all the children of the world, to give them happiness and make this holiday season memorable one. Because this year we're going to turn a page on history, and we are going to become a united world. This is the time to help each other. God bless you all. And I'm sure that I got some music for you to end this show, but call me, email me, whatever it is. It's on BBS Radio, Orly Benny Davis, The Impossible Truth, and we talk to you next week, God willing. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. God bless you all. Bye-bye.